Welcome to the Shaman Jessica podcast, where I share all about my work as a shaman. These episodes are purely based on my personal experience and opinions, and never a substitute for any medical advice. Let's begin our journey.
Greetings, girl, and welcome to my world of phrase and right up to that.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second episode of my podcast. We are going to go into the Essenes today. The Essenes are a very interesting and quite fascinating community that lived in the first century in Judea. And they are where the type of shamanism that I practice comes from. And why don't we actually start this podcast with an Essene prayer? Let us enter the eternal garden of mystery, our spirit in oneness with the Heavenly Father, our bodies in oneness with the Earthly Mother, our hearts and minds in oneness with each other and all of creation. I love this prayer. I actually start my day with it, and I start client sessions with it as well. So this episode, we're going to go into the lineage of the type of shamanism that I practice. We're going to go all into the Essenes, who they were, what they did. And this episode is really about remembering who we are and rising because of that knowledge. It's about honoring the Essenes, connecting with their lineage. And they're really a group that I go back to in my practice for guidance. Well, when we study the Essenes, when we look at the literature that's available about them, it'll become pretty clear that there's not a lot. And this is actually because throughout history, there's been a really great effort to wipe out the evidence of their existence. And we will find out why in this episode. Well, in the literature, there are basically Philo, Plinius, or Pliny if you're American, and Josephus. And these are mostly pro-Roman propaganda writers. And since this century, we also have the Dead Sea Scrolls as a source. And then what is quite interesting is regression material, and we'll get into that later. Well, the accepted view about the Essene theory, I'll just lay it down for you. This is kind of like the general way that people look at the Essenes and really the view that scholars have on them. And this has been held since the 1990s. They call this the Qumran Essene hypothesis. And this is what you can read about in the Dead Sea Scrolls. And at the end of this episode, I'll give you some suggestions for reading if you find this a fascinating topic and you want to learn all about it. Well, the Essene Qumran theory holds that the scrolls, the Dead Sea Scrolls, were originally written by the Essenes and that they lived in Kerbet in Qumran. This theory poses that the Essenes did indeed compose the scrolls. They wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls, and they hid them in the caves in Qumran where they were found. And this they did during the Jewish revolt between 66 and 68, the year 66 and 68. Well, the site of Qumran was destroyed, and the scrolls hadn't been recovered there before. And there are a number of arguments that they give to prove that the Essenes did indeed write the Dead Sea Scrolls. Well, first of all, there are descriptions of initiation ceremonies in the Dead Sea Scrolls, which they would do when new members would join their community. This is written in the community rule in the Dead Sea Scrolls. And these are also mentioned by Josephus, who is one of those pro-Roman propaganda writers that I mentioned. He is a Jewish Roman historian of the Second Temple period, if that means anything to you at all. And what is basically important about these arguments is that they show that, okay, we know that they lived in Qumran, that they hid Dead Sea Scrolls there in the caves, and Josephus writes about their initiation ceremony, which is also written about in the Dead Sea Scrolls. So there we have link number one. Then Josephus also mentions the Essenes as a community that shared property among the members. And this is also described in the community rule in the Dead Sea Scrolls. So another very interesting similarity, which is a description of the way that they lived, which is not the way that the rest of the Roman Empire lived at all. Then another link is that during the excavation in Qumran of the Dead Sea Scrolls, actually not of the Dead Sea Scrolls, but of that town, that archaeological site in Qumran, they found two inkwells, which shows that there was what they call a scriptorium, where they wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls. So that's another link. Then they also found mikvahs at Qumran, which are baths that are carved out of the rock, where multiple times a day the Essenes would cleanse themselves in natural living water that sprung from the earth. That's another link. These were written about in the Dead Sea Scrolls by the Essenes, and they actually found these baths. Then there was a geographer writing in the first century as well, Pliny or Plinius, who I mentioned earlier, who also described a group of Essenes living in Qumran. So that is another hard historical fact that the Essenes wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls. To sum it up for you, simply, well, who were the Essenes? They actually lived in a way that was so beautiful and so inspiring that they really show what was once possible and is still possible. Their way of life basically shows our potential. And although they had a lot of advantages for their practices in their time, there are still definitely ways in which we can integrate the way that they lived and their mission in the way that we live today. And we know that we have their utmost support in doing this, which we will find out in the rest of this episode. And this also ties into the urgency of this practice of shamanism. Well, the Essenes were kind of obsessed with secrecy at their time, and that is also why they were completely wiped out of history. And they had to be, because they were really threatened by the Roman Empire. And actually, the Roman Empire had appointed a high priest in Jerusalem, which was closer to the Essenes, to kind of keep an eye on them, almost infiltrating them. And the Roman Empires did this, as well as the Pharisees, who you might have heard of. And today, efforts have been made to fit the story of the Essenes into the story of Judaism, as well as Christianity, to really tie them in there, despite the fact that they actually were fiercely independent. And they really stood for the freedom to choose your own perception of God, which is extraordinary, especially for that time. And it's only really since the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls in the mid of the 20th century that we really have them back on our radar even. Well, we can look at the Essenes from three main perspectives or vantage points. They're often described as a religious group. So as a group that were priests who were preaching the Torah and they were rebuilding a perfect temple. Then they're often described as a political group and as very extreme militant zealots who were basically forming an army of God. And then we can also see them as a social group, as a community who lived in a way that was based on natural law and sharing. Well, these three perspectives really have been their protection during the time of the Roman Empire. There was actually a secret layer under these groups, which was the core group. And the combination of really the static and rigid of the political perspective on them and the religious perspective on them, which they were really boxed into, they kind of protected them. And that was really effective in their mission of supporting, actually, the Messiah. And that is a touchy subject, to say the least, but we'll find out why. And the Essenes, they really didn't want to be found. Like I said earlier, they really stood for the freedom to choose your own perspective of relating to source, relating to God. And they actually took teachings from Egypt, from ancient Greece, from the Zoroastrian tradition, as well as Judaic sources. And from that, they really distilled the core teachings of light, love, freedom, and ultimately ascension. And they would actually have Essenes who would travel far and wide to collect these records and scrolls from all of these ancient cultures. Well, their teachings really threatened the uniqueness of Christianity as we know it now, as well as Judaism. And that was the case then, and it's the case now. And that is why they've been marginalized in history. Well, the main departure is the shift from God in the heaven as we know it to God in your heart. They really taught that God is in your heart. And they also said that their teaching did not need to be overcomplicated or improved upon. Simplicity was really the key in life of the Essenes and their way of connecting to God, which is really beautiful. Their goal was uniting with light, going into the light, and they said the method to do this is love and forgiveness. So love and forgiveness are seen by the Essenes as processes of the heart, and then merging with the light and breakthroughs of the heart are what we then receive when we practice love and forgiveness. So even though they are really described as these militant religious zealots, they actually said temples and priests are really a byproduct. They only stood for the simplest ceremonies and true reliance on spirit and not scripture. And they stood for love and forgiveness in the hearts of all. Well, the Essene mission wasn't finished yet, but instead of trying to repeat the past, we can connect to them and their lineage and each other really as a soul family as we try and carry it on, which is meant by carrying God in your heart. Well, how did they live in Qumran? Well, most writings actually paint a very harsh picture of them, like I already described, but they were really far from that. And they lived in a community by the Dead Sea in Qumran, and actually there were more Essene communities spread throughout. And they lived a life that was really based on sovereignty, integrity, autonomy, and love and joy for life. They lived atop of the salt cliffs near the Dead Sea, where the scrolls were actually found. And they were there voluntarily. They were not some kind of cult or sect that was forced to live there in a very rigid way of living to protect the coming of the Messiah and all the teachings that they would give him. But they were there voluntarily. They would marry, they would have families, there would be single Essenes as well. And what's really fascinating, and this is the kind of information that comes through sources of regression hypnosis. And this might not appeal to anyone. It's not the straight up academic sources that we have from, you know, Pliny, Josephus, and Philo, as well as the Dead Sea Scrolls. But the Essenes, as we will learn, had ways of traveling in the spirit, like we do when we do shamanic journeying. They had ways to travel into the past as well as the future. And they wanted us to know in the future what was the true way that they lived and what they actually really stood for, even though at their time, and especially because during the time of the first century and the coming of Christ and the Roman Empire, they couldn't be open about all this. They had to protect that knowledge. So they really wanted us to know in the future. And that is why I think that these regression sources are actually very, very fascinating, first of all, and really important, because that's where we find a lot of information that we cannot find anywhere else. Well, what we find in those sources actually completely matches up what we find in these other sources. So they also say that the Essenes were married based on their birth charts, their horoscopes. Like I said, they were also allowed to be single. People could separate and be unmarried. So they said it was not your right to judge others, but only yourself. And they were very free in their way of life. They said no one chooses to be bad, and they were very, very accepting and forgiving. Actually, Egyptians, Syrians, Hebrews, they all lived together, and they had a deep reverence for the dignity of human life. They did water cleansings in these mikvahs. They had a free schedule. They had no excess. They believed in reincarnation. And they also believed that on the other side, we go over what we have learned in this life. There were a lot of people as well with blonde hair, red hair, blue eyes, and the Essenes actually learned how to meditate from where they when they were 3 or 4 years old, which I find fascinating. I always say that we can all learn how to practice shamanism, right? It's really about, of course, some people have more of a gift or talent for it than others, but it's also really about practice. So what a head start, right? If you can learn how to meditate and really connect to source from that age. They also said that it was their duty to study and also to teach. So it was a sin to them to not pass on knowledge, which is also why I started this podcast, to help and share knowledge, because I find that that is really a non-negotiable for me. So the Essenes, they were teachers, women as well as men. And they had libraries, baths, houses, temples made of clay. They all lived together. They had an inner core in their community and also a large community outside of this core where families lived. They grew a lot of palm, vegetables, fruits, and dates, which they grew from spring water. And what is very fascinating is they retreated, right, to hide from the Roman Empire in Qumran. And there was very little water there. It was kind of a barren territory, which is why they had chosen it, because no one would really bother them there. But they had their own ways to use what little water they had to irrigate their land and actually grow a lot of food, have these mikvahs. Well, they ate together. They did a simple blessing before each meal. Religious practices were not really mandatory, and they mostly had them around the Sabbath, the Saturday. Some of them ate meat, like goat, lamb, ox, poultry. Some were vegetarian or even vegan. And I find this really interesting because in the spiritual community, it's mostly very pro-veganism. That's seen as the most pure way to eat. But the Essenes were actually really open and accepting and acknowledged that there's not one way for everyone. And eating meat for them was really a way to tie one soul to the earth. What they drank was water, wine, milk. They slept with no pillow to have their feet higher than the head. And this is something that I've been trying for years, but I really find that I have an emotional attachment to my pillow. But this is something that is very fascinating to me, because the Essenes were known as a group that would grow very old and very healthy. And we know now that sleeping without a pillow is actually really good for you. So I find it so cool that these little things come back in the Essenes, that they were really, they knew how to do things. They didn't use money. Instead, they said that the things that are needed are given, and the things that are worth having are earned. They were against having slaves, and they were pretty much the only group in the Roman Empire that was against having slaves. They only had free people in their community. They did not believe in violence, and very rarely someone would be excommunicated from their community, but they would have their practice of atonement, which means asking for forgiveness. And everyone did this in their own autonomous sovereign way, where they were responsible for themselves. And this is why they were able to live in a way with no real empire over them. They were really sovereign as a community, so they didn't really need to be led by, you know, a president as we have today, or a king. They were able to be completely autonomous, sovereign, self-sustaining, based on everyone taking their own responsibility. They did not do animal sacrifice. They didn't keep pets. They actually had conceptual art, which is really fascinating, but they didn't really have statues or false idols, because they found that that didn't make sense to them, as nature was really a demonstration of God's beauty for them. Well, what about the temple of the Essenes? They said that that was really for God, and the synagogue was for teaching, which is an interesting split there. The Shekinah to them meant the feminine indwelling of energy, or as we can say more simply, the goddess energy, which is the creative life force of the universe, and that was the highest thing that they honored. That was the Shekinah. Well, men and women were both allowed in the temple. They passed a cup with wine for unity and burned incense, sandalwood actually, which is funny because that's my favorite incense that I would always use with client sessions. And then I read that that was their incense of choice because it really stimulates our connection to source. Well, the wine cup that they passed represented that we are all of one blood. And this is where the trying to wipe the Essenes out of history comes in, because this is a ritual, of course, that we know from the Last Supper around Jesus. But when a source shows that another group was already doing this, there are, of course, people that have problems with that because it makes somehow a practice that is tied to Jesus less original, which I think is completely irrelevant. And I might get some hate for this, but I think it's just a practice which is symbolic, which is for everyone, and who cares who did it first. Well, the Essenes wore white and the men grew beards. This has to do with the Nazarite oath, which I've also shared a little bit about, and I can go deeper into that later in another episode. Outside the community, they would actually wear normal clothes, so they would just blend in with other people. And inside of their community, they also wore a colored string around their head, and this would indicate their status and learning. So it would have a different color based on if you were an outsider that was just there temporarily, or it would show how far evolved you were in your learning process. And girls and women would wear this too. Well, the Essenes are really seen as a vessel for the divine without siphoning of energies. What does this mean? Well, they would keep their own communities as pure as possible to be a vessel for angels and God to come in and help them raise the earth's vibration. And without siphoning of energies mean that they would not have any unnecessary negativity or negative energy, and they were completely sovereign. Essenes actually means holy ones, and they were really aware of the higher self. They were exploring multidimensionality through their practices. Shamanism was one of them. And they have been said to, this is where it gets a little bit mystical, to be founded by a race called the Kalu, the ancient ones. And it's said that the Kalu came from Atlantis and traveled widely because of a big cataclysm that wiped Atlantis out. They were able to escape, and they traveled very widely to spread their advanced knowledge so it wouldn't be lost. So they, in order to achieve this, established communities in Britain, which were the Druids, as well as ancient Egypt and around the Mediterranean. And the Kalu actually are supposed, or are said to have, two extra chakras in their chest to support their psychic abilities and these skills, as well as one in the back of their head. And they were really masters in dealing with energy and projecting their consciousness, which is also what we do in shamanism. It's said that they really brought their own advanced knowledge and skills, as well as their technology, to those that they trusted, and the Essenes was one of these groups. And they really trusted the Essenes to keep this knowledge, protect it, and not abuse it, and only use it for the greatest, highest good for all. Well, the Essenes, after the Kalu, were preparing for the coming of the Messiah. And this is actually why they separated themselves from the Roman Empire in the first place. to have a community that was really pure and ready to receive the Messiah and help him by passing on all of this ancient knowledge to him. So the Kalu, they made sure that the Essenes were not really confined to one religion, but they learned all the knowledge that was available to them. They established communities that were always hidden, and some were near Lake Meriodas, near Alexandria. Then there was Qumran, there was Damascus, and the Essenes would in this way be able to safely travel between these places. Their communities were quite small. They only consisted of about 70 to 200 people. And at total, the count of the Essenes was around 3,000 or 4,000 people. So not a lot of people, but still quite a few where you would really have to put all of these secretive protection mechanisms in place to make sure that you are not infiltrated, right? Well, being spread over these different communities, they were able to be visible yet invisible, and open yet secret. And outside of the communities, Essenes would be able to recognize each other still by auras and the vibration that they emanate, but they would not really share any of their special ways when they were outside of the communities, and this was important for them to be able to blend in. Well, at Mount Sinai, there were more extremist Essene groups that the other pacifist Essenes didn't really agree with. And then there was also a community at Mount Carmel, which was more of an Essene retreat, where they could just be still and connect with God. They also had a huge library, which was filled with scrolls that they would copy there. And they would study the stars, they would study mathematics, the law, the Torah. They would make 3D models of all the heavenly bodies. So they were very advanced in astronomy as well as astrology. And they also are said to have a defense around their community, which was based on sound frequency. So a frequency barrier that was protecting them. Well, who were the Kalu? The Kalu, as we can conclude now, may or may have not been this group where the Essenes got their knowledge from. So where did the Kalu get this knowledge from, right? Well, here's where the Melchizedek Order comes in. The Melchizedek Order had their own teachings, and they really adapted those to the civilization they were teaching, so they could really bloom in their own full potential as children of light. And the Melchizedek Order are seen to be a multidimensional order that just watches over spiritual development throughout the universe. And they do not judge or blame, but they just look at the rigid structures that are imposed on people in their incarnations, and they try to help them connect to the light. And they had many, many teachings. One was actually about the balance between motion and rest to achieve perfect balance in the body. According to them, prayer was the most powerful force of change, which is why I have also started using prayer in my daily life. And the Melchizedek Order, they identified 3 stages of ascension. The first was deep knowing, and this meant an awareness of the oneness of all things. And we access this through joy. And then integration, and this means living in this deep knowledge, and ascension, where we merge with the light. And if we want to make this practical, this means that we should focus on joy, which should lead us to awareness of oneness. And then we should live in this awareness, and that is what will allow us to ascend to the light. So in the Dead Sea Scrolls, if you want to read them, you will come across them speaking of eternal joy in life without end. And this can be interpreted in many ways, but they're simply speaking of a stage in ascension, which is the final stage, becoming one with the light. So eternal joy without end. And as shamans, we work on these phases with our clients. Well, what did the Essenes actually believe? Let's go a little bit deeper into that. They knew that they were going to be ransacked by the Romans because with their skills and being able to project their consciousness into the past as well as the future, it meant that they knew what they were up for. They knew that they were going to be attacked, but they chose to stay and guard their secret knowledge anyway because that was their mission and their purpose. And this was not just their purpose, this had begun generations, eons before them, right? They said this knowledge will not fall into the hands of others until it's time to be unearthed at a later date. So it's really no coincidence that 60, 70 years ago, we found the Dead Sea Scrolls. This was all part of their plan. They said their knowledge will then be uncovered when it's time. So it's also no coincidence that you would, you know, find this podcast and all of this information is in many ways starting to come out now. Well, the Essenes used some outer technologies that were given to them by the Kalu and the Melchizedek Order, but some of them were generations old, and there were also a few things that they did not know how to use or fix. But what's really fascinating about them is that they really didn't become so attached to these technologies or dependent on them, because they knew that what it really is about is the inner technology. And that our human form, we are technology, you know, which is meant to ascend and to connect to source. And that is more superior than anything. And this is also one of the things that I find so inspiring about the Essenes, because we are as a society so attached to our technology, to our money, to all of these outside external things. And that really actually diverts our attention away from what we have within, which we can just start to connect with through joy, which is our goal and what we want anyway, and what we think that, you know, all of these outside things is going to give us. Well, there are some things that the Essenes held as really self-evident truths. And remember that we are talking 2,000 years ago. Well, the pillars of the Essene Way were harmony, truth, peace, and pure and unselfish love. Sharing to them, living in this, you know, community-based sharing economy way, which is also becoming more and more popular now, that was a spiritual process for them, because they said that sharing integrated the worlds of spirit and matter. And really think about, you know, what this means. Sharing integrates the world of spirit and matter. They shared their work, their space, their knowledge, their food, everything in their community. They did not fear death. They said death is just, you know, the blink of an eye, and it's like projecting yourself. And there was no use for a body after it no longer housed the soul. They knew that there are no such thing as hell. They said everything, even evil spirits, are ultimately created by God, which is why they were never defeated. And this is also why guides in the journey space and shamanic journeys, it's so easy for them to deal with any negative entity because it's just no match for source. They also knew that rebirth was a fact to them. It was nothing to fear. They stood for the fact that women were equal to men. And women were also taught in schools, and some of them were teachers too, as well as masters or disciples. Children were taught to meditate and use all of these fascinating skills for ascending their spirit from the ages of three or four. And this is to really keep their head open and keep their third eye open. So when a child was born, the masters would draw a star chart, which held a lot of meaning as to the child's purpose in life, as well as their strengths and their challenges. And it would also show their compatibility for a partner. The Essenes had many types of masters and teachers, which had all of these specialized skills and study fields, like the stars, math, geometry, law, the mysteries, language, mental powers, etc. Their skills and powers included energy healing, teaching, researching, traveling, defending the community. And traveling could also mean lightening the body, which we do in the shamanic journey, where you only touch the ground here and there and you move super quickly over very fast distances. So they were able to project their consciousness, and they were also able to control pain by different forms of meditation and mental focus. And the controlling of pain, which I spoke a little bit about in my first episode about my own story, has been for me really my path of my spiritual development. Not by choice, but now that I look back, the controlling of pain and going so deep inside your own consciousness through physical and emotional pain is really part of ascension. Well, they knew that consciousness and energy were not two separated things, and consciousness of humanity as a whole affected the earth profoundly, according to the Essenes, because they are linked and really integrated. They saw every human being as a microcosmos of the universe, and the universe to them was a web of consciousness founded upon harmony and sustained by a great ocean of unconditional cosmic love, which I think is beautiful. And consciousness is really the intelligence of it, and love is the energy of it. So when we look at the universe as almost a matrix of consciousness, the way that it is activated and energized is through love. This also shows really how simple they kept their teachings. When the universe and the human being were fully merged and integrated, according to the Essenes, we become the living truth and an embodiment of wholeness, harmony, light, and peace. So the message of the Essenes was about how to really experience and practice love, forgiveness, and oneness. And all the writings and knowledge eventually only serve that goal. And I think this is, in our society today, a really good reminder that all of our religious practices and temples and churches and rituals and the knowledge around it can be very complicated and start to become this whole entity unto itself, right? But the only reason that they are brought into existence is to serve a goal that is essentially quite simple and something that we could do by ourselves. I think that is very empowering to be aware of. Well, spiritual practices of the Essenes. I said the prayer at the beginning of the podcast about the Heavenly Father and the Earthly Mother, and these are really the foundation for the Essenes' inner core. And they said what one wants to build upon that is your individual choice. So they didn't really enforce a common or general belief. They had their own rituals, like dancing for spiritual aspiration and also dances for handling loss and grief. They had, you know, this spiritual alchemy around sharing. And they said that when we live in this way, all things become possible for us. And this especially was why sharing was so important, the spiritual alchemy of sharing, because in this, the spiritual and material world come together in the heart. And when they're focused into one reality like this, we can really manifest everything. And about healing, they had a very important message. They said, when we heal, we attune to the soul of the sick person, but if the soul says that there is still something to learn here, this could be, for example, letting go of the past. And if thus it's not really for the highest good to be healed right now, we as healers have to respect that. And ultimately, this means that the soul is responsible for spiritual learning of the individual, and that all healing is through consent. And only the soul of the client knows the highest good. And that, for us as healers, as shamans, takes priority over, you know, the act of physical healing. And when the spirit moves to manifest, you know, perfection, ascension, growth, everything else steps aside, including us as healers. We really marry together the perfection of the higher level, so their growth, their health, with the physical body in healing. But we only do this through consent. And if through physical illness there is healing to do for the client, for the person, and they're not ready to heal because they're not done learning, they're not done developing, because this is the only function of sickness, then we have to respect that. We cannot override it, even though we want to. And this is why looking for a quick fix as a client is never going to work in anything, because in our spiritual ascension, there are no shortcuts. It's all through our own soul's development. But when we do, for example, a shamanic journey with a shaman, we want to heal, we're ready, we communicate to the universe that we are prepared and willing to go through this transformation. And it doesn't matter if you don't know how yet, but you have to be willing and prepared and not look for a quick fix. And the guides in the shamanic journey will often give practices and prayers for you to integrate in your daily life, where you also take responsibility. So you are a co-creator of your own healing. And this is really how I work as well. And I also see that without someone being truly willing and committed, taking it very seriously and having skin in the game, that's where the most mind-blowing results and miracles come from. Well, seeing auras, I also mentioned this in my own background, that I was just born with the ability to see them. And the Essene said that that is an extension of inner light, and not all can do it, but just seeing auras is a byproduct of your own inner spiritual development. And living in a way that is close to the Essene way is really a moment-to-moment act, you know, from the heart, because we can try and study as much as we want and read all of these sources with our mind, but it's really about a moment-to-moment awareness that we can choose between good and bad, that we can choose to take our own responsibility, we can choose to be sovereign, which means that we take action to put up boundaries where we need to. It's really a moment-to-moment, day-by-day way of living, and that is why prayer is also so powerful, because it redirects us all the time. And it's very grounding too, especially if we take in to our daily practices the balance, you know, between being active and being still, moving energy through our bodies. That's how we develop. Well, children, how did they look at children? Hey, it's 111 here. They saw children as super important, and they really wanted to hold space and support their spiritual development. They were very tender and loving and nurturing in the care of children, in their early years especially. And I just remember that I had a dream about this actually last night, that I didn't have my own children, but I was taking care of other children, and they were showing such profound spiritual awareness. And I'm just remembering a dream that I had about this last night, interestingly. But they wanted to make them spiritually trusting and open. So they knew that they had incarnated in a very beautiful and harmonious place. And this was especially important before the age of 7, because they said that each shock that the child experiences, especially in that phase, really impedes and stagnates their integration as a human. And we really must embrace this in how we raise children. What is also very interesting is that they, in naming their children, this would be more of an epiphany and a name that would be given to them by their guides. And although, of course, this is not how most people generally name their children today, but just for fun, Google what your name means. I did it too. My name, Jessica, means gift of God. And I see that more as my mission as well, by sharing as much as possible with others. And my last name, Van den Brand, means actually from the fire. Well, what is the reversal? The reversal is a whole topic unto itself, and I'm going to save that for the next episode. But the reversal really shows the urgency of the way of the Essenes and why it's so relevant today. And this is a topic that really, really, really ties into our daily lives and how we are affected by society versus the way of the Essenes. And just as a little spoiler, I'm going to give you a super short recap. And what is important to keep in mind is the Essenes, actually, exactly as it was said in the Bible, they went into the wilderness to separate themselves from the Roman Empire. But the Roman Empire knew that they were guarding all of this powerful, powerful ancient knowledge. So at first, the Romans didn't really want to come near the Essenes. But especially with the coming of the Messiah, which was a great threat to the Roman Empire, they had the Essenes infiltrated. And at this time, the Roman Empire couldn't really afford, because it was huge, to have different groups practicing different religions and practices. And they wanted to have one unified faith for the whole Roman Empire. And they took really important parts of the Essene faith and took that and made it into a very malleable, easy practice. But there are key elements in the faith of the Essenes that they actually inverted to really more accommodate the Roman Empire than the individual and their spiritual growth and their empowerment. And this is what I will go into in the next episode. For now, I hope you have just been able to really visualize the Essenes as I'm talking and really connect to them and what they stood for, and know that this is the lineage that I practice as a shaman. I go deeper into this how and why with my clients, but I just wanted to share with you the beautiful things that they stood for, the beautiful things that they practiced, and I hope that this inspires you and that there are practices that you can take from this and integrate in your daily life, and that you really benefit from that. So that's it for today. I'll be back soon, and thank you so much for listening. Hello, I just wanted to add a few reading suggestions in case you are fascinated by this topic as much as I am and you'd like to learn a little bit more. Well, firstly, I'd recommend to read the complete Dead Sea Scrolls, the Vermes translation. And for that one, I'd say don't read the interpretations or the introductions because they're very biased. And next, I would recommend reading The Jewish Wars by Josephus. This again is like pro-Roman propaganda, very biased as well. But it does have some good information on the Essenes, so I would just skim for the parts about the Essenes. Then if you are also interested in the reversal, which I will discuss more next week, then definitely read the Dead Sea Scrolls Deception by Michael Bajant. That is all about the conflicts of interest involved with the publication of the Dead Sea Scrolls and finding them. And then lastly, if you're interested in the regression therapy sources, I would recommend Stuart Wilson's The Essenes, Children of the Light, and then also Dolores Cannon's Jesus and the Essenes. See you next week, and thanks again for listening.